Welcome to The Coin Club, a podcast brought to you by the Seven House Coins Currency Bullion, where we discuss everything related to numismatics. I'm glad to have you along with me for my journey and excited to share with you the very best of numismatics. Hello, friends, and welcome to episode 30 of the Coin Club podcast, the first episode in 2023. It's been a while since the last episode, and I know it. You know it as well, and I'm here to tell you that this year there is a breath of fresh air with me in the podcast. More episodes for your enjoyment and more often. I hope you all had a very happy holiday season filled with fun, laughs, family, and the good times that you will cherish for the rest of your lives. My simple wish for you all this new year is that you remain healthy. That is it. Period. Health. With health comes happiness and it affords us all the ability to do the things that we love and mean so much to us. We're a tight-knit community here on the Coin Club podcast, and many of you know that my family is semi-local to me, however the other half is from Argentina. I don't get to see either of them as much as I would like to, however, you can understand how money and travel constraints keep me from seeing the Argentine part of my family. The elephant in the room is that I have been away for a while. November 22nd was the last episode that you got, and I apologize for that. Although this podcast and my Instagram and Facebook pages are a crucial part of my existence here in the coin community, I do have a full-time job and family commitments that must take the number one priority. And this is why you haven't heard from me in a while. I guess I don't really need to explain everything that happens in my personal life, but I feel that I must, as this podcast has become part of me, and to my surprise, has been part of the community as well. I usually get all the notifications telling me I have so many downloads of the podcast, or Instagram or Facebook interactions. However, I thought that they were just for the new episodes. I was wrong. They have kept coming through with all of the lapse in time that I have been away, so I know we have new listeners and people who are just subscribing to the podcast. It really warms my heart to know that all the effort to bring this to you is making a difference in our community. Even if you're out there saying, "Tone, I knew you weren't going anywhere," it really makes me happy to know that I'm making a difference and new people are finding this podcast. Well, with all that sappiness out of the way, I'll tell you what was going on with me personally. From Thanksgiving to the New Year, the industry that I'm in is the most busiest time of the year, so there's that. I also got word that part of my family from Argentina was coming up to Miami to visit a relative that is living there, so what better opportunity to see people I rarely get to see than to take a road trip to Florida? I have the vacation time to use, so I set it all up. Got a rental car and headed on down. The trip down was nice. In my younger days, I would have driven straight through, which is a 17 or 18 hour drive with rest breaks. However, I'm at the point in my life that I would much rather take a night's rest on the way down and explore a new place. And that is exactly what we did. I stopped in Savannah, Georgia on the way down. And oh, what a town that this is. I intend on making this a destination at some point, so I have more than a few hours to explore it. You know when your sensories get overloaded with everything to eat and do and take in? Well, that was my experience in Savannah in just about 4 hours, from the time I checked into the hotel to the time I collapsed in the hotel bed. I knew I wanted to see this town again. We got up bright and early to head down to our hotel in Fort Lauderdale and take in all that beautiful weather during the frigid months that the Northeast gives us this time of year. It was in the high 70s and 80s, and I was loving it, absolutely. Had a few coin shops on my list of places to go and see while I was down there, but you know what? I didn't get to see any of them. Not because I didn't have the time, but because the time that I had with family was more important to me than visiting a coin shop. I know you're listening to this and saying to yourself, it's only an hour or so. You should have taken that time to visit those shops and check out what they have to offer. Well, friends, I'll let you in on a little secret. As much as we love collecting, hoarding, or stacking, the very most important thing in your life besides health is your family. It really is. Those shops you want to check out, they'll be around for you to check out at a future date. If you can eke out a little time while you're with your loved ones to take part in the hobby, that's great. If you can't, then it's not the end of the world. I got to spend a great week down in Florida with the fam from Argentina and intended to make it back to PA to spend time with my family for Christmas. Hour by hour, it was planned out, and I would get back to my home on Christmas Eve and be able to drive up to Pennsylvania to see my family for Christmas Day. Well, that was the plan, anyhow. What have you heard from me on past episodes? Of course you're going to get a story. We said our goodbyes to our Argentine family, packed the rental car up, and headed north. Our planned stop was to spend the night in Charleston, South Carolina, and see what they had to offer. Now, let me tell you, I love food, good experiences, and architecture, and I was a little leery to spend the night in Charleston, but it was a hit for me for sure. Tack that on to another place that I want to go back to and spend a couple of days at. I left Fort Lauderdale in a t-shirt and a pair of shorts and got out of the car in Charleston, freezing my tuchus off and laughing when the valet at the hotel asked me where I came from. He said, "It's freezing here and you're in shorts and a t-shirt." Anyhow, great town, had a fantastic meal, and braved the cold to walk around the city as long as we could to see the historic buildings and offerings that it had. I am definitely going to go back there. Gorgeous town. Got up the next morning bright and early and headed over to a place called Big Bad Breakfast. A must stop for something to eat if you're down there. Wolfed down some absolutely delightful food, drove around the town in the morning hours so I could get a better look at it, and started our journey north to my house. I would be home by dinner, or so I thought. Driving north on Interstate 95, a South Carolina deer had a very different plan for my Christmas. I worked with the very patient and understanding people at the rental car place, Uber, and the local restaurant that we sat at for 4 hours until we could get the ride 1 hour back down to Charleston Airport for another rental car to head back north. Remember, Charleston was where I started. Started the morning out early on Christmas Eve and ended up finally getting a rental around 5 p.m. and continued the journey north. We stopped in Rocky Mount, North Carolina around 8 or 9. I can't remember the exact time. I intended on being home way before this time, but life is what it is. I checked into the hotel, Holiday Inn, which is my hotel of choice. Quickly put all of our bags in the room and headed out to find something that was open to grab a bite to eat. I always liked to patronize local establishments and tried to get one that I thought I might like, courtesy of a Google map search, but they were closed. Rightly so, it's Christmas Eve. So I said, let's forget about a regular restaurant and go to a fast food place. I decided on Popeyes. I do love me some Popeyes fried chicken. It just hits the spot. Pulled into the drive-thru, and they were closed too. Long story short, I went to a 24-hour Walgreens and ended up nuking a frozen dinner in the microwave at the hotel. It truly is tough to see the whole picture when it seems that everything is playing against you, and it can really get you down. What you need to see, and I gathered from my trip and looking at the big picture, is I had a fantastic time down in Florida with relatives that I rarely ever get to see. I did get up to Pennsylvania to see my family, albeit one day late on the 26th. Yes, they were all fantastic enough to meet me at my parents' house on the 26th to celebrate because of our misfortune. And if you remember the Christmas movie, A Christmas Story, I ended up eating Chinese food at a local restaurant on Christmas Day in my hometown with my best friends not more than an hour after I got home. Life is hectic, often played out hour by hour, and this was no exception for me. The end-all be-all is that although I've been away from you all, my loyal subscribers, fans, and personal friends whom I chat with on a daily or weekly basis, this holiday, for me, was one for the books, and it showed me the exceptional ability to be grateful for everything that I have and any way that it comes. Along with all of this, I had to find a new video editor and a way to post on Instagram as my previous options went from being free venue to having to pay for it. I make no money on the podcast, so my only option is to find a different way to get all this content to you. All in the month of December. Well, all my coin friends, after that long story of what has been going on in my world, let me tell you that on this episode of the podcast, I'm going to give you a good dose of the news, some more roll hunting tips and reminders, the World Coin Spotlight as we continue to head south, and we're going to start off the year with a look into the Jefferson Nickel and all the history that comes with it. Thanks again, friends, for joining me on this episode of the podcast. And now, let's get on with the show. In the world of news, if you're a numismatic show junkie, the upcoming show that you won't want to miss is the 2023 National Money Show at the Phoenix Convention Center in Phoenix, Arizona. It is happening from March 2nd to the 4th. If you plan to attend, you can be sure that you will see millions in rare coins and numismatic treasures. Hundreds of coin dealers, along with lectures and presentations from noted numismatists. If you're a member of the ANA, the admission is free. General public is charged a $10 admission. The Baltimore Whitman Spring Expo will take place this year on March 16th through the 18th at the Baltimore Convention Center. You know, this is one of my favorite shows as it brings a lot of dealers into my area and you can find practically anything that you want. Remember, hit me up for some recommendations on parking and places to eat and see when you're down there that interests you. Would love to meet up with any of my listeners who plan to attend the show. The Paris Mint, Le Monnaie de Paris, is my favorite world mint, for those of you who didn't know, has some offers that you should check out. For the 2024 Olympic Games held in Paris, France, the Mint will be commemorating the event with their own coinage that you surely don't want to miss. Now, I'll tell you, I purchased a coin from the Paris Mint that showed the transition of the last Olympic Games to the future Games in Paris, and it cost me a small fortune for shipping. Shipping across the pond is egregious. However, if you want a coin from the Paris Mint for your collection, I would tell you that you should go together with a couple of friends and get a group order in to make it less costly to send them over here to you. The coins to commemorate the games range from a couple euro to those made of silver and gold. Your wallet is the only thing that will be holding you back on these offers. The coins are, shall we say, extraordinary in their design and something that the United States Mint can only dream of creating. One more offer from their mint that I would like to share with all of you high rollers out there is the Nature of France, the Oak Laurel Wheat Coin. It is a 999 fine gold coin weighing in at 100 grams. It has an exquisite design which features a symbol of growth and fruiting. Wheat depicts the large number of descendants, resurrection, vegetation, and fertility, and a lucky charm for growth and prosperity. It will only set you back a mere 10,500 euro, of which the shipping will be far less in this instance than the coin. Even if you can't afford the coin, go over to the website and check it out. It is truly a great design and something I only wish I could have in my collection. The United States Mint has been nestled into their cozy bed, but wants to remind you that if you enroll in their subscription program, you will get free budget shipping on any offer that they have through that. The very first offer that they have coming out in 2023 was on January 30th with their American Innovation $1 coin 2023 rolls and bags of the Ohio Innovation Dollar. Prices range from $34.50 to $117.50, depending on what you want to get. February 6th saw the release of the 2023 Native American $1 coin rolls, bags, and boxes. This program honors and recognizes the important contributions made by Indian tribes and Native Americans. The obverse of the dollar is the one we've all come to know and love, Sacagawea with her infant son. The reverse features Maria Tallchief and four additional dancers in balletic pose. February 13th saw the release of the James Buchanan Presidential Silver Medal, and on the 14th they released the American Women Quarters 2023 Rolls and Bags of the Bessie Coleman Quarter. Coming up in February, you can expect to see the release of the First Amendment to the United States Constitution 2023 Platinum Proof Coin called Freedom of the Press. Their Coins Online newsletter wants you to know that they heard you loud and clear and are bringing back the Morgan and Peace dollars in 2023. They have made advances in taking care of online ordering in aspects to bots and the hardships that we face with offerings that are in the high demand, and their household order limit has been addressed as well. The U.S. Mint wants your opinion if you're a subscriber. They sent out an email on January 27th asking you to complete a customer survey on how they can improve the products and services that they offer. Remember, if you complain about the offerings and services, you have to complete the survey. Let them know what they can improve upon and what they're doing well. It's your time to voice your opinion. Oh, and Silver. Let us talk about Silver. How we love to hate you. Just from keeping tabs on the cost, silver has come up quite nicely from the low of $17 that we saw a while back to a high around $24 more recently. Well, it's creeping down again. Slowly, but it's not holding the $24 that we saw recently. I can remember not so long ago that it hit the low of $17. If you bought in at that level, you probably have a nice smile on your face right now. It's one of those things that you cannot predict. But if you play the market right, you're going to get rewarded in the end. Either way, if you're a true collector and not one looking to play on the market, your collection is getting a little bit of a boost right now with the increased price of gold and silver. For all you PCGS subscribers out there, they have announced their quarterly grading specials for the new year in 2023. From January 1st to March 31st, if you submit 5 or more coins for grading, you can receive a special PCGS coin stand that will display your coins in a nice holder. Check out their website for more details. If you can't afford their subscription price or submission fee and still want a nice holder to display your coins, get in contact with me. I 3D print coin stands, display holders, and the like for your coins at a very affordable price. Made in the USA by me, not like the garbage that comes from China, and it is a trusted source that you can depend on. As far as PCGS goes, that is their quarterly special. Lastly in the news, my friends over at my favorite publication, Numismatic News, have a great story out on the record-smashing sale of the ultra-rare 1958 double-die Lincoln set. It sold for a whopping $1,136,250 with the buyer's fee on January 22nd. Head on over to their website to check out the article and see the photos on this spectacular Lincoln set, depicted like nobody else can other than Numismatic News. Okay, all you roll hunting junkies, it's been a while and I would love to hear and see what you found while we've been away. Don't forget to email me or send me a direct message on Instagram with all your findings. I always love to see what you have, and if you're up to it, I would love to feature them on my Facebook and Instagram pages. Well, on this episode of the podcast, we're going to give you a couple of Roosevelt dimes that you should be on the lookout for in your pocket change or roll hunting. Nothing worth silver, because you automatically know to pull that out of circulation. Anything from 65 or after. The first one to be on the lookout for is going to be a 1967 double die obverse dime. The GOD is where you're going to be on the lookout for the doubling, as well as the designer's initials and the one of the nine in the date. 1 year later, in 68, you're going to be looking for another DDO. You'll be able to see this doubling in the we, the date, specifically in the 6 and the 8, and the Y in Liberty. Pay special attention to those details, as that is where you will find the doubling. Numero Trace, in this edition of the tips and things to be on the lookout for while roll hunting, is the 1969 Denver Minted Repunched Mint Mark. If you listen to all the YouTubers and the like out there, they're going to tell you to check out a partial ghost-like figure above the northeast of the mint mark. Well, Tone is going to tell you that you need to check out the middle of the top of the D. If you see a line coming up from the middle of that space, you have yourself a repunched mint mark in that year. Zoom in more closely, and you'll catch the farthest most right part of the repunched D. However, if you see that spike on the top of the middle of the original D, you have it. Don't look any further. Number four on the list to keep your eyes out for is the 1970 Double Die Reverse. We don't often share a Double Die Reverse on the Coin Club podcast, but this is the one you want to turn your 1970 dimes over for. You will find this doubling on the T, but most importantly on the E and the S in the States. The last one in this episode to be on the lookout for is the same year, 1970. However, it will be the Denver Mint Mark. Check out your D's and do me a favor. Turn them over. This coin is going to be a double die reverse. Don't waste your time on anything else other than looking at the America in the coin. If you know, you know. If you take a look at the America and you see doubling, you've got this one in the bag. Dimes are a very underrated segment of our coin collecting hobby, especially in roll hunting. But there are a lot of opportunities out there to find interesting and valuable things for your collection or to resell. Each one of these findings could net you anywhere from $10 to a couple hundred. It's all in what you know, folks. Learning is fundamental. Spotlight fans, we're continuing to head south on our journey, and we're reaching the second to last country in our journey south from the United States. We're heading to Uruguay on this episode. Their coat of arms is a magnificent sight with blue, gold, black, and green colors depicting an oval shield, overseen by the rising gold sun surrounded by the olive branch. Their capital city is Montevideo, and the country has a population of around 3,407,000 people. Their currency is the Uruguayan peso. As of the publication of this podcast, the Uruguayan peso is equivalent to 0.025 United States dollars. I know you're saying, Tone, this doesn't make a lick of difference to me. Tell me what a beer costs. Well, if you were to pull up a bar stool at one of the local restaurants and order yourself a local draft, you would pay approximately $3.88 United States for that frothy mug of goodness. Not bad for a restaurant beer. The history of their money goes way back, and I'm happy to be able to share it with you. Pre-independence, their currency was common for all that of the Spanish Americans. Spain, Portugal, and even Argentine and Brazilian currency was circulated. Way back in 1828, their currency was based on the silver peso of 8 reales, which was more commonly known as the petacón, and the gold onza de oro. Oro meaning gold for all you non-Spanish speakers out there. They didn't have a national currency during this time, so General José Rondeo's government allowed foreign silver and gold to circulate around the country. 1831, all the copper coinage in circulation was demonetized and withdrawn. While this happened, the government leaned on their neighbor of Argentina to help them out with the 1/10 real coinage to the tune of 1.6 million of them in circulation. This was to be the first official coinage of Uruguay. Enough was enough, and in 1839, the government decided on a new monetary system, which they called the Sistema Real. Officially, this was Law 208. That was the name. It authorized the minting of 20,000 pesos in copper coin. The first of these coins went to the public's hands on October 15th of 1840. A pretty cool date to remember, since as of 1990, the country has celebrated October 15th as Dia de la Numismática Nacional. Their very first coins were copper, two of them to be exact, and their denominations were 5 cents and 20 cents. They were struck by a private company, Taller Augustine Huve. The history of Uruguay's moneda is something that you should really take time to look into. If you Google history of Uruguay's money, you will get a vast listing of things to dive into. While many of the countries we've delved into in the World Coin Spotlight have minted their own currency, Uruguay does not. Throughout its history, and since 1855, they have gotten their coinage outside of their own country. Other mints around the world have helped them to get their coinage into the hands of their people, including Britain and even the United States. The coin we're going to spotlight today is a pattern coin. something you'd have to have a good sum of money to invest in, because there are only 300 that were minted. It is a gorgeous coin, as is most of the coins we feature here on the WorldCoin Spotlight. I take time to look at every one of the coins minted by the country we're taking a look at, and even if you can't afford to put one in your collection, I hope you can at least value the research it takes to bring you the coin. The pattern coin we're talking about today is the Uruguayan Cinco Nuevos Pesos, the founding of Montevideo pattern coin. Really, take a look at this beauty up on Google and tell me what you think of it. The year is 1976 and it is a silver coin. It weighs in at 18.25 grams and is 33 millimeters round. On the obverse, you're going to see a portrait of Bruno Mauricio de Zabala, whom is the founder of the capital city of Montevideo. He's looking right, and you see behind him an old stone wall, which is the fortification of the city. The value of the coin and the name of the country are engraved. On the reverse of the coin, yes, the reverse, it's just as magnificent as the obverse. You see the country's coat of arms, the date, and the inscription, which translated says, "With freedom, I neither offend nor fear." I can't find a price on this coin. However, I want to lament that this is one that I would love to have in my collection. A truly fantastic coin for those of us who don't have the means to collect such coins. I urge you to at least take a look on the internet at the photo and bask in the design of the coin. Folks, the main event here on the Coin Club podcast is going to be the Jefferson Nickel. The mintage on these coins started in 1938 and goes until our current date. One of the longer running coins in the history of the United States coinage. However, do you know what a nickel could buy you back in the day? Well, pre-Jefferson Nickel, you could buy a Nickelodeon movie ticket, a shoe shine, a pack of Wrigley's gums, and in the 30s, when the Jefferson Nickel came out, you could buy yourself a chicken dinner candy bar. Who ever heard of a chicken dinner candy bar? And what the heck is it? I've never heard of it. If you have, let me know. In the 40s, you could get yourself a 12-ounce bottle of Coke with a Jefferson. The 50s, you could buy a Reese's peanut butter cup. During the 60s, you would have to be healthy, as you could get a green bell pepper at the store for a nickel. In the 70s, you could buy yourself a postage stamp. Well, part of one, as they were 6 cents, and in the 80s, a piece of bazooka bubblegum. From the 90s on, you might as well just keep one in your pocket to scratch off a lotto ticket with, because 5 cents isn't gonna buy you much. Our beloved Jefferson Nickel replaced the Buffalo Nickel in the year 1938. The Buffalo Nickel was in circulation for 25 years, so it could be replaced by a design that was brought about by the Mint and not by legislation from Congress. Actually, the Secretary of the Treasury, not the Mint. The public didn't create much of a fuss over the need for a new nickel. The Mint didn't appreciate the problems it had with the minting of the Buffalo Nickel, die breaks and the like. So in late January 1938, they announced a competition to create a new design for the nickel. If you were chosen to be the winner of the new design, you would end up pocketing $1,000. Now you're probably saying, "Tone, $1,000 isn't a lot." Well, it is if you have bills to pay, but in today's equivalent, you would expect to receive around $21,000. Not too bad, if I do say so myself, for drawing up something to be put on a coin. From the date of the announcement, the designers had until April 15th to get their masterpieces into the Mint. If you submitted a design, you were to be judged by three officials, the director of the Mint at the time, Nellie Taylor Ross, and three other sculptors. The only caveat was that you had to have a portrait of Jefferson on the obverse of the coin and a depiction of Monticello on the reverse. Even with the prize money, there was not many entries into the contest by mid-March. People must have been waiting for the deadline, because when it hit, there were 390 entries to judge from. From almost no entries to 390, there would be only one winner, and that man would be Felice Schlag. He was a German-born citizen, and although he was the winner of the design, a little-known fact is that his initials would not be on the coin until 1966. That's it, right? Not by a long shot. Schlag's design was contested by the Mint officials. Schlag's design was that of a three-quarters view of Monticello, and they said it had a palm tree on it, which they said could not have been grown by Jefferson. The request was made, and Schlag made a different view of Monticello without the palm tree as what we see today. From the first call for the completion of the design until the initial production of the 5-cent piece, it was actually rather quick. Why was this any different than past coins we featured here on the podcast? Because the government didn't have their hand in it. Plain and simple. That's it. The Mint, their competition, and the designers were hard at it to get this new nickel out to the public. And on October 3rd, 1938, all three mints had fired up the presses and began minting that new coin. 12 million of them, to be exact. The official release to the public was on November 15th, 1938. Not bad production numbers for a little over a month. By the end of 38, more than 30 million nickels were struck. With the new design out in public and for circulation, people were hoarding these coins instead of keeping them in circulation. If you were alive back then, you rarely saw a Jefferson nickel in circulation until around 1940. The first change in the design came in 1940 when the Mint recut the hub, which showed a sharpening of the steps in Monticello. Six full steps for all of you high-level collectors out there. With this change also came about a few others. Two varieties came with this change. The reverse of the 38 and the reverse of the 40. A 1940 proof that had the 38 reverse was also put out there for the keen eyes of collectors to discover. All of you history buffs know what was on the verge of happening on the world stage, which caused our next major change in design of the Jefferson nickel. World War II was happening, and the war effort required much-needed nickel. The Mint realized this and decided it was time for a change. Stop using nickel for the coins and give it up to the boys fighting overseas to stop Hitler's reign. Congress decided to authorize a 5-cent piece made of 50% copper and 50% silver on March 27, 1942. The Mint took a look at this and weighed in with the vending aspect of this as well, deciding what would work in that realm. They came to the conclusion that the nickel would be made of 56% copper, 35% silver, and 9% manganese, and the production of this coin started in 1942, a split year. You can find Jefferson nickels minted in 1942 to be of the original metal and the 35% new silver design as well. The easily discernible difference was the mint mark for the new silver nickels. It was going to be very prominent and at the top of Monticello on the reverse. This was also the first time the mint mark for Philadelphia appeared on a coin. In 1946, after the victory of the Allies in World War II, the composition of the original coin came back, removing the silver from the coin altogether. This included the removal of the prominent mint marks above Monticello. In 1950, the Denver Mint saw a great reduction in the mintage numbers, only 2,630,030 nickels to be exact. When these mintage numbers got out, the nickel from Denver was hoarded in great quantities. If you ever roll search for nickels, you'll know that the year 1964 is plentiful, as there was a large increase in production this year. The original design of the Jefferson nickel went the whole way until 2004 when it ended. The Westward Journey nickel series was introduced. It was actually in the planning stages since June of 2002. Mint officials wanted to change the design for the upcoming anniversary of the Lewis and Clark expedition. The Mint reached out to a Republican representative from West Virginia, Eric Cantor, about the change. He sponsored the legislation which allowed the Mint to strike the different designs on the nickel and put Monticello back on the nickel in 2006. It was signed into law on April 23, 2003. The Westward Journey series of Jefferson nickels had begun. In 2005, a new image of Jefferson was put on the nickel by Joe Fitzgerald. The Declaration of Independence, the word liberty, so written by Jefferson, which is pretty cool, was used in the design of the new coin. 2009 saw a low demand for the coin and production followed. It is one of the more in-demand dates for the modern coins, and in 2020, the West Point Mint struck the nickel for the first time to be issued in the mint sets and annual sets. The Jefferson nickel, its designers and mint officials have made sure that this piece of U.S. coinage has been with us for some time, many decades. It entered into production without much fanfare and has stayed for us for the long haul. It's an easy set to collect with many varieties and known errors, even counterfeit coins that end up in some of our collections. Another topic to be covered on future episodes of the podcast for sure. Well, folks, that's a wrap for this episode of the podcast. I hope you enjoyed it, and I can't wait to have you along with me on the next episode of the Coin Club Podcast. Thank you for joining me on this episode of the Coin Club Podcast. I had a great time with you and look forward to sharing with you on the next episode. Please follow me on social media. I'm on Facebook at the 7 House Coins Currency Bullion and also on Instagram at the Coin Club Podcast. You can also go to my website, www.7houseccb.com, and give me some feedback on this episode or some suggestions on what you would like to see on future episodes. As always, I'm grateful to all of you for your support and look forward to seeing you the next time on the Coin Club Podcast.